recorded, ready to hear argument 031151 in Re Texas Association of Schools.
May it please the court, Mr. Levon, Publicitarian, make argument for the relator. Reserve 6 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. My name is Levon Hovnatanyan, and along with Mr. Dale Jefferson, we represent the relators in this case, TASB and TASB Risk Management Fund. In my time before the court, I will show that the respondent abused his discretion by denying the relators' motions to transfer venue of this case to Travis County. As the court knows, in the IPA, the parties signed a provision or embraced a provision which says venue shall lie in Travis County, Texas, unless otherwise mandated by law. And that brings into bear Section 15.020 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code. On a day when this court has reviewed poorly drafted statutes, we are happy to say here's a clear one. Here's one where the intent of the legislature can clearly be discerned. And indeed, the parties don't dispute the facial meaning, the plain meaning of the statute. Section 15.020 defines major transaction. And it says that's a transaction evidenced by a written agreement, which we obviously have in this case, under which a person pays or receives, and then here's the key language, or is obligated to pay or entitled to receive consideration with an aggregate stated value equal to or greater than $1 million. And that statute, Your Honors, tells the tale in this case, because that is precisely what we have here in the IPA that the parties agreed to. Now, the other side will say, and has said in their briefs, well, what we're talking about in this case is executed consideration. And the executed consideration is the premiums. And the premiums, during the time at issue, is only $33,000 and change. Well, of course, that's one side of the consideration issue. But this court told us in such cases as Federal Sign versus TSU in 1997 that consideration is a two-way street, that, in fact, there can't be mutuality of obligation. There can't be a contract unless consideration goes both ways.
In law school days, I seem to remember that consideration from the side of the insurer would be the promise to pay if a certain event occurred. And year by year, the consideration is simply the promise. It may be 10 years that go by, and the insurer pays the premiums, and the only thing they get and receive is a promise. They never get a dollar. But year by year, the consideration for the contract isn't it just the promise to pay
it is.
In a certain event?
It is, Your Honor. What we would characterize that as that's the coverage. That's the consideration that goes the other way. In other words, to take your
situation.
But isn't
that the consideration?
The coverage?
No, the promise to pay if as and when, which may never happen. But
yes.
The actual consideration for the bargain is simply the promise.
Yes, Your Honor. I think we're saying essentially the same thing. It's the promise to pay that is the consideration running from the carrier to the insured. For instance, let's say in your hypothetical, years go by year after year after year and no claim is made. There's nothing to handle, there's nothing to adjust, there's nothing to investigate. At the end of those years, or at the end of every policy term, if there's no claim, the insured cannot go to the carrier and say, well, you didn't do anything for me, you didn't handle a claim or adjust a claim, you didn't pay a claim, so there's no consideration, I'd like my premium back. Under their argument, that's what can happen. Under our argument, it can't, because the promise to pay, even a contingent promise to pay. If catastrophe befalls the school district, we will pay covered losses. That is consideration. And in fact, that's not just our argument. This court has said so. In a case with admittedly lower stakes, Mid-Century Insurance Company versus Kidd, in 1999, where the issue was, is $10,000 in personal injury protection, in that kind of coverage, is that consideration? This court unhesitatingly said, yes, it is.
The promise to pay if would seem to be only worth the premium paid for that. Otherwise, be a fool for making that deal.
If
does not make the premium match up, then you should charge. You better charge more.
Agreed. The slight difference is that during the entire policy term, BISD knew, as any insured knows, and technically the fund is not an insurance company, but it's so obviously analogous that I'm going to continually refer to that. They know during that policy term if there is a covered loss, they are covered. In fact, they're covered up to $17 million. And that promise to pay, as Justice Owen puts it, that promise to pay is the consideration that they receive for their premiums. They have no reason to pay any premiums if they're not getting anything, and we have no reason to take the premiums and not provide anything in response.
Does consideration in this statute mean consideration like contracts, or does it mean, or is it a more ambiguous word than that? Is it just like people throw around consideration? They don't mean consideration that supports a contract. They just mean something that is involved in the transaction.
Your Honor, I think the legislature intended it to be in the first more formal sense that you used it. I think they're talking about consideration for a contract. The very first words, or almost the very first words, of the major transaction portion is a transaction evidenced by written agreement. And I mean, obviously, a first-year law student understands that a contract and an agreement are virtually the same thing. So we have a transaction evidenced by written agreement. We think the intent of the legislature is clear. They're talking about contracts, and they're talking about consideration in the bargained-for exchange meaning of the term.
So if the consideration is the promise to pay if, what is the aggregated stated value of that promise?
The aggregated stated value, Your Honor, of that promise is, in this case, over $17 million.
But that's not what
income.
You paid for the promise. I mean, that's not what the insured paid for the promise.
That is correct. Their consideration, without question, was the premium,
$33,000. What is the aggregated stated value of the promise? Not what you might be liable for, but the promise.
Well, but, Your Honor, the promise is up to what we might be liable for. That's why the $17 million figure fulfills that particular portion of the statute. I'll give you an example. It takes me back to the Kidd case, where the court said $10,000 in coverage is the consideration. That was the promise to pay a covered loss.
But it's not $10,000 handed over. It's the promise to pay if, as, and when up to $10,000.
That's correct, Your Honor. But that's the stated value of the consideration, is the promise to pay. If a condition precedent occurs, we promise to pay up to X amount of dollars. The stated value of the consideration. In
yes.
other words,
although in this case you say the promise, there is no promise because there is no coverage at all.
Well, Your Honor, there's a promise to pay a claim if it's covered. And in this case, there is no promise to pay because the claim's not covered. We promise to pay covered claims. It's just that we determined in this case it's not covered, hence the litigation.
So we would equate the promise not in terms of the value that the insurance company assigns to the risk, but to this contingent possibility that there may one day be an obligation.
Absolutely right, Your Honor.
Why is that?
Well, and I'll tell you, because of the very definition of consideration, perhaps this is a better answer to Justice Owen's last question, too, than the one I gave. In the Krill case from Dallas in 2001, the court examined what consideration can be and what it can't be. And the court said consideration is a broad concept. It can include a benefit to the promisor or a detriment to the promisee. And the court elaborated it can be a right, it can be a benefit, it can be a responsibility. And that is what, I beg your pardon.
So is every lottery ticket a major transaction?
No. No lottery tickets are a major transaction.
Well, but every lottery ticket, there's at least the potential to win over $1 million.
That's correct, Your Honor. But the difference is if you turn the lottery ticket over, you will not see any guarantee of a $1 million plus payout to the person who buys the ticket. Whereas in this case, BISD knows if it has a covered claim.
But it's a contingency, just like insurance. If X happens, if we draw your ticket, you'll get $1 million. So why, in this, if you have water damage, you'll get $17 million. Why isn't every lottery ticket under that theory a major transaction?
Because, Your Honor, the it's not part of the bargain for exchange. When you buy a lottery ticket,
that's not what most lottery ticket buyers would say.
I agree. But nevertheless, realistically, when you buy a lottery ticket, the possibility of a gigantic payoff, $1 million or more, is just not part of the bargain for exchange. You're gambling. You're buying a chance, and that's all. Whereas in this case, you're buying a promise. Now, it's a contingent promise, but case law has held a contingent promise to pay is still a promise to pay, and that's consideration. That fits with the Krill Court's decision, several other cases, which I won't rattle off sites, but they're cited in our briefs, that they say that a contingent promise to pay is consideration running from one side to the other.
Let me just make sure I understand one. If we disagree that the IPA is a major transaction, as the statute defines it, then you would agree that venue was proper in Duval County under the general and permissive venue statute?
Not necessarily, Your Honor, no. We wouldn't necessarily agree.
These folks agreed to try the case somewhere else, right?
Yes, they did, Your Honor.
So it's just a matter of whether we can get to it by mandamus or whether y'all are wasting your time down there in Duval County, and after it's all said and done, we're going to say, look, you signed a contract. You said you'd try it somewhere else. What are you doing in Duval County?
Agreed, except that I need to modify one slight thing, Your Honor, if I may. There's no question you can do this by mandamus. The very same section of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code in 150642 it is a new provision that says this is mandamusable.
If it's a mandatory venue.
That's correct. That's correct.
What was your answer to Chief Justice Jefferson's question? You said... he said this is not a major transaction. Is venue proper in Duval County? Your answer was no because...
Well, Your Honor, there are several other venue issues that they need to get by here. I will certainly tell you, for the purposes of our argument, if the court finds that 15020 doesn't apply here, then obviously we're in big trouble. There's no question about that. Then the venue fight becomes a totally different issue. But happily, because of this contract and because of what 15020 says, we respectfully suggest the court should not do that because it is a mandatory venue statute that fits hand in glove with the contract that the parties agreed to in this case. And I'll illustrate the point one other way regarding consideration. If you look at the cases cited in the other side's brief on this very point, on what consideration is, you'll find Brownsville Fabrics, you'll find Rosenstock, you'll find Stewart Title versus Mack. In every one of those cases, the courts didn't say premiums are consideration, case closed. They specified premiums are the consideration that flows from the insured to the insurer, and they dropped it right there. In fact, in the Mack case, the statute was a one-way statute in a different portion of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code, which only looked to the amount paid therefore. And it's a $50,000 limit. In that case, it didn't make it because it was $16,000 or $1,600 in premiums. And I see I'm out of time.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Mark Broder will present argument to the real party in interest.
May it please the court. I think that the court has focused its attention on what we believe is the pivotal issue in this case, and that is whether this particular series of events constitutes a major transaction under Section 15020. The reason it doesn't is that the idea that this is a major transaction is contradicted by the statutory language, by existing case law, and by strong public policy. And I'll start with the cases. In 1889, the Supreme Court held that venue for trials is a matter for the legislature and not a matter for private contracts. And then most recently in 1972, Justice Jack Polk held that the fixing of venue by contract, except in such instances as permitted by Article 1995, is invalid and cannot be the subject of private contract.
Of course, in the old days, Southwest didn't fly between South Texas and Austin. Now, the fact of the matter is, for argument today, you could leave your home this morning, argue, and then go be back by this afternoon in your office, right?
I might be able to, but it would be hard for the Board of Trustees of the Benavides Independent School District to do.
If they buy their tickets 14 days in advance, they can do it just as easily and quickly and cheaply as you do. And isn't it silly these days to apply laws before airplanes and cheap Southwest flights? Say, oh, this is terrible. You have to try all the way up in Austin. When that's not a problem anymore.
Well, the Fort Worth Court of Appeals in 1997 reaffirmed this ruling and held
sure, it's like all law. We keep saying the same thing until somebody says this is ridiculous.
And that would be for the legislature to change the law. Currently, the law is that
Jack Pope wasn't sitting in the legislature when he said that, was he?
No. But, Your Honor, with respect to the existing case law has not been modified because there's no basis to do it. In fact, the legislature did speak and said, we will carve out a narrow exception. It's called a major transaction. There are no cases yet decided under that. I assume that's
your client signed a contract that said we'll try this dispute, the one we filed in Duval County. We agree to do it in Travis County. Now, did they sign that with their fingers crossed behind their back, or how?
No, they signed that probably without knowledge as to whether that was void under existing case law.
They don't have lawyers working for the school district.
I don't know whether they reviewed that particular provision. And that's the same provision that's in all of the risk management fund contracts.
What's going to happen to the economy if we tell everybody, sure, sign a contract and whatever it says, you can just later say, well, I wasn't very sophisticated. Even though I'm a school district, I wasn't very sophisticated, and so pay no attention to that contract.
Well, even that provision, Your Honor, with respect to venues, says that unless venues mandatory elsewhere, and I think that the only way in which venues not mandatory is if our argument under Section 15011 is not a compelling argument. We believe we have a compelling argument for mandatory venue. So we believe that that would not apply because there is mandatory venue here. And we have cited cases in which this has been upheld previously that the improvements to land are to be considered a part of real property for purposes of that mandatory venue provision. But going back to your larger point, Your Honor, with respect to why not let parties contract to this, obviously, if this, in effect, changes the law with respect to major transaction and some contingent future springing event may create something that makes something that looks like a minor transaction major, then we're going to have an awful lot of companies who contract for venue all over the state. It wouldn't just be Austin. It would be Houston for credit card companies. It would be insurance contracts. There's thousands of small businesses that have more than $1 million worth of property, but their premium, like Benavides, was $33,000 or something like that. So I believe that what it does is it abrogates or at least cuts away at the statutory scheme for venue in this state. And I believe that's why this is an important case.
In 15020, it says major transaction means, and it goes on, it says, is obligated to pay or entitled to receive consideration. If it said some other word besides consideration, amount, fund, something, pick another word. Would that apply differently in this situation?
It may.
We're hanging a lot on whether consideration means consideration as to make a contract valid, or consideration in a more general sense.
I think the key word, and we've put a lot of attention on consideration, I believe one of the key words in this provision is the word is. It says that a person pays or receives, which hasn't happened, they've denied the claim. They say there is no obligation. And now they come before you and say, well, but there is. But in their pleadings and in their letters to Benavides, they have said, we have no obligation to pay you anything. And
now, well, but surely, if you paid $1 million premium for this policy,
We'd have a major transaction on our hands.
Even though they would still take the position it's not covered.
Right. because
so it doesn't seem to me to turn on whether it's covered, because you can always say, well, but we, yes, we would owe you under the right circumstances. We just don't owe you under these circumstances.
There's a logical point here, Your Honor, and I think you're driving at it, which is, and I think that earlier it was mentioned, that in this case, consideration needs to be equal. You can't give $33,000 of premium, and the underwriting analysis that's in the record we presented to you, they calculate the value of that obligation at roughly $33,000. There's an equality. It wouldn't be consideration if we gave $33,000 and they had to give $10 million. It just, the whole concept of consideration wouldn't make any sense if at the time of the bargain it weren't equal. And so,
but this statute, you could write a statute. The legislature could write a statute that said a person is pays or receives consideration or is obligated to pay or entitled to receive under some set of circumstances more than $1 million.
Yeah, I think
and if it were written that way, it would pretty clearly cover the situation.
I think so. If this statute had said or may be obligated to pay instead of or is obligated to pay, then there'd be some, but again, that would be a Pandora's box, because who knows if they're in the future going to be obligated to pay that amount. I think the reason that there's some certainty in this statute is that it's looking at the contract, consideration, the amount exchanged, and you can figure that dollar figure out. You can't figure out what this claim is worth. It may be that the judge and jury in Duval County think that it's worth $225,000. It may be that it's worth $2.5 million. Who knows? So I think the only certainty that we can arrive at here is by looking at the actual exchange consideration.
Well, I'm trying to go a little further than that. For example, I contract, or the school district contracts with a contractor to build a building for $5 million. Would that be a major transaction?
Yes.
You're not paying anything until you get your building.
Right.
You may never get your building.
Right.
If you get your building, it may not be up to $5 million worth.
Right.
But still, it seems like that's a...
I think that would be. I think that there's two parties. One party's obligated to pay $5 million. Another's obligated to build a building. It looks like that fits the provision. Major
and yet, you don't have to pay if you don't get it, if you don't get your building. And you don't have to keep building if you don't get pay. So, I mean, the whole thing could fall apart at the $50,000 level. Go out and start moving dirt, and the first check bounces, they say, oh, that's it for us. But that would still be a major transaction, don't you think?
I think you could look at the agreement and say it is. The key case is this. Although this is a case of first impression, as the court has pointed out, there is a case that is quite similar to this case, and it's the Stewart Title Guarantee versus Mack case. The Houston Court of Appeals decided that case in 1997, the first district, and then the writ was dismissed, WOJ. And the same issue came up in that case. And in that case, it was title insurance, and the individual who had purchased the title insurance brought suit. The title insurance company said, we can go to arbitration here under the Texas Arbitration Act. And the issue was whether or not provision 171.001B of the Texas Act applied. And if you look at the language of that act and you look at the language of 15020, there's amazing similarities. Essentially, what that says is that where the total consideration, therefore, to be paid, not actually paid, but to be paid, or furnished by the individual is $50,000 or less, then there is going to be jurisdiction under the Texas Arbitration Act. And what the court held in that case is, and I'm going to quote from the court, accordingly, the consideration for the insurance contract was the cost of the policy, not the cost or value of the insured property. So that was recent that the Houston Court of Appeals looked at the most similar language we have in the existing body of case law and said, we've got to make some rhyme or reason out of this. It's got to be the amount of the premium. It can't be the amount of the limits or the value of the property, because otherwise, you know, we just don't know what the total amount is going to be.
What if we take the same building from Justice Heck's example with an agreement to pay for it in equal payments annually for 10 years? So I have a $5 million building. I'm paying $500,000 the first year. Is that a major transaction?
I believe so.
What if there's a provision that says if occupancy in the building never exceeds 70%, you don't have to pay? After the first year,
it's clear occupancy is going to be below 70% of the transaction?
I wouldn't think so. If there's some future event that hasn't happened yet, we can't tell whether there's an existing obligation of paying more than $1 million. I don't see how that can be a major transaction.
So do you think any contingency eviscerates the total dollar amount, any contingency to eventually having to pay out the total dollar amount eviscerates that total amount?
I believe certainly a contingency like what we have on our hands in Benavides does. And I think that most contingencies would, because it would affect this term is obligated to pay in 15020. Because one party would maintain, well, we're not yet obligated to pay that.
But back in the example, if pay $500,000 out the first year, then go into bankruptcy and never have to pay again, still it's a major transaction.
I think you have to look
at
the time that suit is brought. At that time, you look at the agreement. And if at that time there's an existing obligation, I would say under this language, there would be a major transaction. But I think those are fascinating hypotheticals because they do get at the issue of a contingency that has been brought up. I just believe that a claim on an insurance policy, especially when one party has denied that there's an obligation to pay, is the type of contingency that would prevent 15.020 from applying in this case. What's more, we have cited the court to the cases that we believe apply for mandatory venue in this case under 15.011. And the two primary cases, besides this Supreme Court's case in Piazza v. Phillips in 1954, are the Smith versus Reed case, which is a Dallas Court of Appeals case in 1983, and the Permaseal of Texas case, which is a Waco case in 1975. And in those cases, the court looked at 15.011 and sought to determine whether, or its predecessor, sought to determine whether damage to a house or structure implicated that venue provision, that mandatory venue provision. Now the venue provision has changed.
Well, but the school... The insurance company didn't damage your buildings.
No, but the claim is made that an insurance claim was made, it wasn't paid, it was denied, there's a lot of damage to these buildings, they continue to be very damaged, and every day that goes by, there's more and more problems as a result of those buildings.
Right, but if somebody drives a truck into your building and causes damage, that case needs to be tried as damage to property in Duval County. Does that mean, though, that the people who drove the truck and have insurer who pays their judgment, if their insurer refuses to pay, they also have to sue on their insurance contract in Duval County? That's different from damaged property.
But the difference between that hypothetical and our case is we have a contract between the two parties. We have a contract between the risk management fund and the school district, and we also have a negligence count in this case. So we're maintaining you're more like the person driving the truck rather than the insurer for the person driving the truck. And you drove a truck into our school district. The fact is that by denying the claim, the school district is struggling through many means with trying to repair this damage itself. But in any event, there is damage to real property here. Now, I know that the Allison case, I don't believe, reached this court on that issue. But I would point out that the Dallas Court of Appeals and the Waco Court of Appeals, I believe, would agree with our interpretation that, especially given the damage to real property language in 15.011, that where you've alleged damage to real property, even as a result of negligence, that you would have mandatory venue. So we believe that under two strong bases, both of which have public policy implications, this case, it's important that this case not involve a transfer to another county. Although I certainly believe, as Justice Brister pointed out, that the hardest part about this case is the fact that in the contract it states venue shall lie, but there is that exculpatory language unless otherwise mandated by law. And I think in this case it is mandated by law, both because we have mandatory venue and because we have a long line of cases saying contracts for venue are void as against public policy in the state of Texas. We only have one very narrow exception, and to keep it narrow rather than make it extremely broad is the reason I think we're here today. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel.
May it please the court, Mr. Dale Jefferson will present the rebuttal to the relator.
May it please the court, Your Honors, a few points on rebuttal. First, turning to the issue of consideration, there's been some questions from the court regarding the lottery analogy. But there are a couple of problems with that analogy that differentiate it from 15.020. The first is that under 15.020, the pre facto requirement under that statute is that you have to have a written contract. And there's no allegation that a lottery ticket is a written contract. And secondly, as my co-counsel pointed out and as the line of cases points out, there's a difference between a chance and a promise. And the two-way street of consideration, what the insurer does is a promise and it is not a chance. And a contingent promise to pay has always been held to be consideration to pay. That's why the contractual right of indemnification or the promise to pay specified losses in the future is consideration for the premium paid. That is the two-way street. And that's why we don't just look to the amount of money that is paid by the school district. Because if that was the test, then you never have any consideration for insurance policies for two reasons. First, an insurance company never charges as its premium the same amount as its coverage. If that was the case, you would never need insurance. And secondly, as is pointed out in our cases, there would always be a failure of consideration if the condition preceded doesn't come up. For example, I'm covered by life insurance. I'm sure most members of the court are too. The fact that we're all here is probably good evidence that our beneficiaries have never made a claim on our life insurance policy. Yet we are not allowed to go to our life insurance companies and say, I'm not dead, there's no consideration, refund all of my premiums. The contingent promise is consideration in this case. Now, there was a discussion by opposing counsel, and basically the discussion there was two-pronged. First of all, that the legislature was wrong and that we should concentrate on the word is. But given that the statute requires that there be a written contract, and given the totality of circumstances, when you apply rules of statutory construction, I think it will become abundantly clear that the plain and common meaning of consideration is just as we have in an insurance transaction. And the problem with utilizing the is approach is, as the Chief Justice pointed out, there are other venue allegations that we have made in this case which are not before the court because they're not mandatory venue issues, such as our general venue arguments and our 257 arguments. The point is that we may be in front of this court again on a post-verdict motion. And if the jury returns a verdict of over $1 million, then under their definition of the word is, we now have a major transaction. Now, that goes to show why it should be given its plain and ordinary meaning. And under that scenario, under the two-way street of consideration, this is a major transaction. Now, counsel hangs his hat on one case, the Stewart Title case, which he says stands for the proposition that you only look at the premium paid. But a closer examination of the Stewart Title case shows that the facts simply don't apply, because what that case dealt with was a trigger mechanism as to whether or not an arbitration clause would apply. And in that case, the arbitration provision specifically said that we're only going to look down one way of the two-way street, and we will only look to the consideration that was paid by the buyer. We aren't going to look at the promise that was given by the title insurance company. And we will only look to what the buyer paid, and that will make or break the determination of whether or not it's more or less than $50,000, which was the trigger of whether or not you had binding arbitration. And so that case certainly doesn't help the district, because it was a very narrow interpretation and it had to do with a specific contractual agreement in an arbitration clause. It had nothing to do with general concepts of consideration whatsoever. Next, they turn to the issue of 5.011, and they try to make the argument that this court has soundly rejected since before the Civil War that somehow or another that recovery of damage to real property, if you make a claim that says, I have damage to my real property, that somehow that bootstraps you into the umbrella of 15.011. But this court has opinions as far back as 1856 that says that you have to read that in context when you look at the predecessor statutes, because that statute also talks about suits for recovery of land or for partition, for suits to remove encumbrances from title, trespass to try title, suits to quiet title. And we don't have those in this circumstance. Your Honor, I see my time has expired. May I briefly conclude?
Yes.
We certainly don't have that in this situation. What we have is we have damages to fixtures onto real property. And this court has always said in grass fire cases, in pecan tree cases, and the Austin court said in the Allison case that fixtures are not enough. And for these reasons, we respectfully ask that this court reverse the courts below and transfer venue of this case to Travis County.
Thank you, Counselor. That concludes the argument and all arguments for today. And the clerk will now adjourn the court.
All right. Oh, yeah. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas now stands adjourned.